Good morning. This is Lydia Randa with Rainmakers here on KVOI, The Morning Voice. And want to say welcome to everybody. Matt, you're right. Yay, spring.
Right? there's sunlight out at a reasonable time.
It's exciting.
And we didn't even have to change our clocks to get that.
Exactly. You know? I love that we just get to keep our same time and kind of confuse all, everyone else around us. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of our own homegrown Rainmakers, the series that highlights the best of our borderlands. And speaking of best today, want to remind everybody during March, Women's History Month, that this is International Women's Day of Judges. Didn't know that there was one of those. I don't know, Matt, if you knew that.
I did not know that.
And also, guess what? In Australia, it's Landline Operators Day. And I remember when I read that, it actually reminded me of back, way back in the day, I was a phone operator, a telephone operator. And our guest that we have this morning is smiling and winking at me because she was as well. And you know, I was thinking, if you just want to freak out some of the millennials and younger generations, just start talking about a landline. Don't you agree?
That's true.
So
I had a phone operator in my life too.
So we've got that in common.
Indeed.
All of us knowing how to wear headsets and type into a keyboard and provide good service. So everybody, don't forget to tip your servers and support women during Women's History Month and always. And speaking of leaders, we've got a fabulous guest in the studio with me this morning is Ann Miske, who is the Social Venture Partners Tucson CEO. She was appointed just a few months ago. Good morning and welcome, Ann. Thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to be here today, Lydia. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. We are excited to talk this morning, as we do always on Rainmakers, about exciting current goings-on in our community, leaders that are bringing innovations and collaborations, and Ann, you certainly fit that bill. Remind me, I think it was October that you were appointed into this position. Is that correct?
That is correct. Middle of October, although I must say it feels like longer, but in a good way.
Yes, lots and lots going on. Well, we have certainly seen you out and about, and I look forward this morning to talking a bit about your journey, a bit about the highlights that are going on and making the community, giving them some friendly reminders about the great works at Social Venture Partners, and we have some exciting things coming up in April. I think Fast Pitch is on its way.
Yes, that's right. April 3rd, get your tickets either Fox Theater website, or you can go to our website, which is svptucson.org. It's an amazing event, and you can find out what's actually going on in Tucson with our nonprofits.
Absolutely. It's a great combination of the information of the folks who support, the applicants and participants of the cohort, and being able to bring funders together to help fund those in the cohort to help take the programs to a new level or sometimes launch new programs and help serve community. That's kind of my little overview of that, but we will get into that in just a little bit. But before we go more into Fast Pitch, tell us, Ann, a little bit. I know that Tucson is not new to you, but it is more recently your home. You've just come back for this role, but tell us where you've been.
Sure. Well, I can say that I was born here in Tucson, so
great.
It's always been very much part of my life. My parents met here, my grandparents, my mother and her parents moved here during the Depression. You know, it was the California dream, kind of grapes of wrath. They were on their way to California and their car broke down in Tucson. They couldn't afford to fix it.
Wow.
So they ended up staying. My dad was from a farm in Western Canada and got sent down here at 16 for his health. Met my grandmother, who took him under her wing, and through her met her daughter, my mom. So the two of them married, and my brothers and I were born here. Even though we moved away when I was just a baby, because my dad was a university professor and got a job in the Midwest and then back in Canada, we had family here all the time I was growing up. So Tucson was very much part of our family coming down and visit. And so my husband and I were thinking about getting out of Los Angeles, just wanting to not be living in quite such a hectic community. we decided to come to Tucson. And my husband is also an amateur astronomer. So
the skies here in Tucson
were really exciting for him. So we moved in October and haven't looked back. Love, love, love Tucson.
Oh, so wonderful. That's a great story. And I hear so much in there about history, local history, other folks coming into town and making this their home, starting here and then going off elsewhere, and then the return back, which is something that not only at Rainmakers and the Morning Voice, but really here at KVOI, is very much about highlighting all the roots that Tucson brings, not just to our Southern Arizona, greater Southern Arizona region, but really how it affects and builds up our great state and the states around us. And it sounds like you very much have lived that experience in your family, your parents have, and now you're back to continue that.
Yes, that's right. And I just will say that there's a bit of Tucson in Canada, because when we moved to Canada when I was very young, nobody had ever heard of Mexican food, and my dad fell in love with it, and my mom, living here in Tucson, so started to bring in Mexican food into, you know, rural prairie Alberta in Canada, and so they were responsible for taking Mexican food.
How wonderful
is that?
And
now, of course, it's popular everywhere. So.
Sure. Everyone has a version of tortillas. We know that for sure.
That's right.
They call the sandwiches wraps now, but we know them as burritos, hot or cold.
That's right. Burritos only.
Yes. Well, that's really exciting to understand that's not just a binational. That's really a trinational, because when you're from Tucson, you're in a binational region. Mm-hmm. Even though it's not right on the border, I know that some folks think, you know, who aren't familiar with the geography of Arizona, think that Tucson's right on the border, but it's really not. However, it pulls so much from our friends from the south, not just Mexico, but beyond. And lots of folks settle in here. But then coming from our northern border, that's really exciting. I wonder how it was when you were living there, growing up there, maybe traveling back and forth. Just as common to go across the line and back again for school, for learning, for visits, for business, for shopping, as we experience here in the southern border?
Yes, very much so. I mean, we were very, very close neighbors, friends, and there was just this constant back and forth across the border, and so many people have friends and family in either country. Mm-hmm. So it really did feel like that. Again, close neighbors, friends. We used to always go shopping down. We'd go down to Montana, which felt like you were kind of going back 100 years into the, you know, the bars with the back wing doors. But we love shopping in the States. And so it was a really rich childhood growing up. And again, my dad was a professor of Latin American history, because he fell in love with the history and the culture when he lived here. And they lived in Mexico for 10 years. So I really feel kind of a North American affiliation, if you will.
Absolutely. That's a great descriptor, and I think one that is so valuable and especially relevant in our current times, is to really being able, first of all, to have that firsthand perspective gives great depth to the interaction that we all feel, whether it is state to state, country to country, or a whole continent. And I can see your eyes light up when you think about those, not only those memories, but the experiences of being very comfortable in a full North American identity.
Yes, very much so. And I think you learn so much and you realize the importance of culture and community, but also sharing those things. And, you know, I'm also going to talk into the mix that my grandmother was, well, in Canada called First Nations. Down here, you'd say American Indian. So again, I feel this incredible affinity for this land, for the people that live here, whether they're from the north or the south. And that has always been sort of one of the driving forces in the work that I do, that it is about community. It is about, yes, we are different in some ways, but we're all human beings. And that sharing of culture and identity and all of those things enriches all of us.
My goodness, that's so great. Well, I can hardly wait till we come back for our next segment, because we're going to dive a little bit more into actually the work that you do, which is so community-centric and it has impact, I think, multi-generational impact. So I'm looking forward to that deep dive. I think we're getting ready for our first commercial break here. So with that, listeners, you are listening to Morning Rainmakers, the Monday show of The Morning Voice. I'm Lydia Aranda with our guest, Ann Miskey. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Lydia Aranda, and I am here at KVOI, The Morning Voice, with our Rainmakers episode on this nice Monday morning in Tucson, Arizona. My guest this morning is Ann Miskey, the CEO of Social Venture Partners in Tucson. Ann, thanks for being here this morning.
It's really a pleasure.
Right before the break, we were talking a little bit about your background, your history, being born in Tucson and being able to go out into other parts of the world. And now you're back in the work with this new role as president and CEO of SVP Tucson. And we were also speaking about some commonalities we have in our background with roles, careers in telecom, being phone operators.
Yes, that's right. That's how I started my work was as a telephone operator. And, you know, it's weird to think that there's a whole generation who has never experienced operators, you know, calling zero or calling 411.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, I think it was simpler back then. But yeah, it was a great way to start my career. And I worked there. And then I was able to save up enough money to go back to college. And I went to Europe. So.
Oh, how fabulous.
Yeah.
It was a great, I just remember learning so much during my years as a phone operator as well, also in the 411 or the long distance information, which was always whatever area code, then 555-1212.
Yep.
And I, at one time, knew all of the area codes in the country, knew several of the Canadian area codes, knew a lot of country codes by heart. And I do remember having to unlearn, because we typed on a keyboard,
mm-hmm.
So typing was no problem, but I had to unlearn my many, many years ago typing of a 10 key or a calculator. You might have had that kind of training and relearn the numbers because they were situated like a phone pad, a push button phone pad. Again, I think the younger generations are going to say, what are you talking about? But funny little things like that and wearing mm-hmm. headsets and certain phrases we had to use with different clientele who were calling for all kinds of questions.
Yep. I always loved it when you'd get the call at 2 a.m. from some guy who had just, his wife had just had a baby and he was trying to call all his relatives and he was completely just confused and excited and trying to help. Those were the best.
Yes,
I love those.
That's a lot of fun. I do remember some fun calls. And holidays, Mother's Day being the most telephone traffic day of the whole year.
Yep, I remember that as well.
Everybody calling their mom.
Yeah.
Fun background. Well, and that took you, you had a career with Bell.
That's right. I also worked, after I graduated with my master's degree, I wasn't quite sure what direction I wanted to go. And I'd been working part-time for Bell Canada, which is the largest, at the time, the largest corporation in the country. And they offered me a job. And I ended up staying for 10 years, working in communications, public relations, government affairs. And again, it was a great place to work at the time. I learned so much, which I've been able to incorporate into my work in the not-for-profit world. So yeah, it was good times. And that's the same time I met my husband when I was working there. And it was just a really good place for me to start my career. And then I had kids and life changed.
Changed for a much more full, I say, dynamic yes. situation. Yes.
Dynamic is a good word. It was wonderful. I mean, very happy, very proud mom. But it did sort of change my career path a bit.
Gosh. Well, let's talk a little bit about what you're doing here in Tucson with Social Venture Partners. So in a recent article, I believe it was in Biz Tucson, a profile that they did with on you when you were first coming into the role and the announcement, you said, I'm thrilled to be joining SVP Tucson as its next CEO because it's a privilege to join an organization that has such a strong foundation of excellence and an impact in the community. and very big shoes to fill, and you were looking very much forward to not only interacting with your staff, with the board of directors, but also the community members to continue to support Tucson where everyone can thrive. And I love that quote, and you have been doing exactly that. In fact, you and I and a handful of others were in a very intimate meeting, a salon, if you will, where you and your team invited in an interesting cross-section of community engagement, community leader, community supporters, some funders. And we got to hear your story a little bit more firsthand, and I really enjoyed hearing about that. But I loved also just the setup. It wasn't folks from all the same walks of life. We were all coming with a different experience in our interaction with your organization, but also in a different cross-section of what we do in our lives, and bringing that into that community thriving conversation. So first of all, thank you for having us.
It was wonderful. It was a wonderful event. And you know, I think you hit on something that to me has been sort of a part of sort of the foundation of my work and belief in the idea that community coming together is incredibly powerful, and we need people from all walks of life, all experiences, backgrounds, viewpoints. That is the richness that's in our community, and that is what enables us to exceed. So to succeed, you know, too often in the not-for-profit world, we hang out with only other nonprofits. Sometimes we might bring in government and maybe bring in a little bit of the business community and certainly funders, because we're all looking to survive. But we lose out if we don't have all of those voices around the table. I learned that years ago working on a major project, and it was what we call the unusual suspects that often made the greatest contribution, because yes, they looked at things from a different perspective. So that is sort of my lifeblood, this idea of bringing all of these people together and, again, seeing what you can create together.
Oh gosh, that just, I get so excited to hear you say that, because when I look at your background, when I understand the kind of projects you've put together, and we're going to tell the listeners about that in just a moment, but that is exactly what I see and take away, and it makes me perk up and wag my tail. I am very excited when those different voices can come in. Collaboration is really key about building solution. We have to include, you know, inclusivity is not just to have token participation. It's really to build on the experiences and the knowledge, the historical knowledge that people have in those experiences, or organizations have in dealing with those specificity. Say that early on a Monday morning.
Yeah. You know, you're totally right. I think one of the things we have done, again, when working with community issues, is that the one group we never talk to are the consumers, the people who are actually dealing with the issues, right?
Sure.
We would never, a business would never do that. They would never do a whole strategic plan and never talk to the customer. And yet we've done that for decades in the not-for-profit sector. And fortunately, that's changing. We're including the people who are living whatever the experience it is, hearing from them, taking direction from them, because they know what they need. And so, again, it's created this incredibly dynamic opportunity for us to really make change happen in a positive way.
Fantastic. I love that one of your experiences when you were the first executive director, this was back in the 2010s, in the 20-teens, you were the first executive director of Funders Together to End Homelessness. And during that time, to me, one of the most fabulous creations that you established and led was a national funders affinity group with over 400 foundation and United Way members focused on evidence-based and systems approaches to ending and preventing homelessness. That's a lot, because the crisis of homelessness, or folks who are housing insecure, it is such a big, broad spectrum. It is not a single cause. It is not a single participant that, or I don't want to say victim, but person experiencing that, that's not singular. And the folks that can bring solution come from all kinds of walks of life that need to work together. So how is it running an affinity group of 400 and actually getting something done?
It was a challenge, let me tell you. When I first took the job, it was just an idea. And they brought me down. They recruited me from Canada to come down. So I had to learn a whole new country. The government acronyms were pages long.
So that was coming from Canada back to the U.S.?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. We were based in Boston, although I did a lot of my work in D.C. With the federal government. And what I realized is that these foundations and funders were people who wanted to make change happen, but often didn't know what to do. And we're using, you know, we're funding the same old things that seemed really good. And I think that what we found is that we could have conversations and show evidence and really get people excited about doing things in a slightly different way that could have tremendous impact. And again, that's another piece of my sort of foundation in my career, is we do a lot of collaborating and talking in the not-for-profit sector.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't always lead to action.
Right.
And so I believe in collaboration 100%, but it has to be with impact. It has to be with action. And so we learned a lot together. We tried some things and failed, but failure can teach you so many things.
Sure.
And ultimately what we saw was major impact happening and major changes happening, which was... brings more people in. There's nothing people like more than success. So we were able to grow exponentially and, in fact, ended up having chapters in a number of cities all over the country, in Canada. We, you know, went to Europe, Australia, and really provided opportunities for people and also information on evidence-based practices that actually worked.
That is wonderful. You know, you're bringing to mind, I remember, so all of my parents and step-parents were teachers and educators and advocates. And I remember an awful lot of conversation, hearing them talk to each other or to their friends. My brother and I often had a front row seat to some of these very interesting conversations that were taking place in these industries or the education, higher education, together with another specific industry. And often in tackling some issues, they would talk about getting together to talk and the frustration of, okay, we've had enough think tanks. That was a big term back then. We've had this think tank and that think tank. When are we going to get to do tanks?
Yeah.
So you reminded me a little bit about that. We're getting ready for another commercial break here, but when we come back, we're going to dive a little bit deeper into social impact. You're listening to Rainmakers here on The Morning Voice, KVOI, 1030 The Voice in Tucson, Arizona. Good morning. Welcome back. This is Lydia Aranda. We are on Rainmakers on a Monday morning here in Tucson, Arizona. And Matt, thank you so much for that operator song. We are speaking right now, with Ann Miske. Ann, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. And I love this song.
Yes. In fact, any of you listeners who didn't hear at the top of the show, Matt, Ann, and I all have phone operator backgrounds. So we're chuckling at that. And knowing kind of an archaic industry that we come out of.
My late mother-in-law was an operator in another country.
Wow.
In Japan.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Wow. So we've got that global, global telecom.
So we've got Canada, U.S., and Japan. We've got our bases covered.
That's right. We sure do. And a little bit, I have Australia and Glasgow, Scotland as well. So fun stuff. We are listening this morning to Rainmakers, or you are listening to Rainmakers. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit off there. Let me try that again. This is the Rainmakers Show, and you are listening to us speak with our fabulous guest, Ann Miske, the CEO of Social Venture Partners Tucson. And we are speaking about not only the impact of that organization, which we'll do a deeper dive in, but we're talking about Ann's really broad and deep background in serving community. She's held many roles in Canada, in the U.S., back east, out in Los Angeles, now coming back to the Southwest here in Tucson. But Ann, we were speaking before we went on break of your role with being executive director of Funders Together to End Homelessness, which was a national funders affinity group. We were talking about the fact that you had 400 foundation or United Way leaders that came together and represented their organizations and constituencies. What a huge group.
It was. It was really amazing. And you're dealing with, you know, some of the biggest foundations in the country. And recognize the influence that they had, but in a very positive way, and that we could make change happen by having these people at the table.
Absolutely. One of the things also I'd love for you to share with our listeners a little bit more detailed is not only what this organization was doing, but the fact that you didn't just sit around and talk to each other, so to speak. I know that nobody was just sitting around. There was a lot of work being done, a lot of data being gathered, a lot of studying, real-time studying happening so that you could create relevant and current opportunities for improvement as well as opportunities for action. I think that was the point we were talking about a little bit, that the action beyond just the talk and the research was what you were thriving for, and you had to do it in a pretty short time frame.
Yes, that's correct. You know, there were certain issues that we identified that just were pretty much being ignored. For one example would be youth homelessness. It was hardly funded at all by the federal government. And yet, as I traveled all over the country and working with communities, it kept popping up as being a terrible issue that so many of our young people, especially those who were in the foster care system, were ending up on the streets. I think the percentage is close to 50% of foster youth will end up homeless by the time they're 26.
Oh, my goodness.
So this was something that we saw and that the government was ignoring. So this was an opportunity for us to advocate with the federal government. And we took a number of our funders and we trucked off to Washington, D.C. to have meetings with some of the cabinet members to really talk about the issue of youth.
That must have been very not only exciting, but a little bit nerve-wracking. First of all, knowing that you had this very dynamic issue that was, in fact, not working very well, that you had, I mean, failure was not an option, it would seem to me. And you had a lot of different members' voices and backgrounds coming together to try to have, I want to say a singular voice, maybe a powerful voice to the cabinet, not just to elected officials, but to actually the cabinet leaders. Tell me about how that went, preparing for that, going there, maybe what you were feeling.
So I remember sitting down in a meeting with a number of these, again, think of the biggest foundations in the country. And we were going to go in and see a number of the cabinet members and really advocate for some things. And we were nervous as could be. You know, we were all talking about going to D.C., the corridors of power and meeting these very important people. And we prepared, and I tell you, lots of work went into it. And then we went in and we had the meeting. It went extraordinarily well. The funny thing was, after the meeting, we talked to one of the assistants who was there in the meeting that we had gotten to know often. You know, you work with staff very closely. Mm-hmm. And the staff person said, oh my gosh, the cabinet members were all so nervous. They were all these big foundations were coming in. And we were all laughing, think here, both sides were all nervous that we were meeting these important people. But after that, we ended up, you know, some of those barriers were broken and we were able to really make things happen. And again, we even brought in people from other places who'd been very successful. This was around youth homelessness. I brought in a group from Canada. Again, there mm-hmm. those international connections.
Sure.
And the result is that youth homelessness started to get funded by the Department of Housing and Urban Development, by HUD, Health and Human Services. They all started working together. And now there's an incredibly robust program around the country for youth homelessness, and it was directly as a result of this advocacy work that we did.
How wonderful. What a great outcome of that. And I really do like your point. I'm chuckling a little bit about you're nervous. Your team is a bit nervous saying, oh goodness, we're going to go see these leaders. And on the other side, they're like, oh goodness, those leaders are coming in to see us. And doesn't that absolutely explain what happens all the time between nonprofit sector and funders, between funders and corporate, between corporate and funders and nonprofit? It is all a jigsaw puzzle that comes together with each side being a little bit unsure about whether they're going to please the other side and perhaps actually get to action, and whether the action is then going to be sustainable. And that's one of the things that you focus on at Social Venture Partners, is it not?
Yes, absolutely. We really, the work that we do is really about, again, how can we create, or I should say create, that sounds presumptuous, how can we support a city, a county where everybody has opportunity, where everybody can thrive. And so while we support immediate things, because you have to help and support people if they're suffering, if they're dealing with hardships, et cetera, you can't forget about them. But if that's all we focus on, then we're not going to stop the inflow. So the work that we do is both about helping support nonprofits who are working on immediate issues and needs, for example, homelessness, hunger, all of those things. But now we're looking to go much more upstream and recognizing that you need to stop those problems before they happen. And Social Venture Partners, the reason I took the job is because I was so impressed at the work that it did and the understanding of deep community impact. But we also recognize now is a time in our history when we need to work closely together with a broader community, with all of those people, all the different sectors. And really, by coming together, we can prevent a lot of things from happening. We can keep children in school. We can make sure that young people have opportunity for trade school or higher education or really good jobs. Much better to do that and start, you know, when babies are born and help and support, so that by the time they reach adulthood, they can go off and thrive rather than this continuous cycle of intergenerational poverty.
Sure. So service providers is kind of where it started. What are the services being provided that you were supporting? And now you're saying, let's tackle whatever the ecosystem is, whatever the infrastructure is, the other issues that might happen at that level, so that when folks get into the stream, they are better prepared, or there is a system that is better able to catch the issues before they get too large. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, absolutely. And it's much better for everybody. And the other thing is, it's much more cost effective to stop problems from happening. We always say it's cheaper to keep somebody housed than it is to let them become homeless and then try to help them.
Sure.
So it's a benefit all around.
And I think the famous phrase of, if you think education is important, imagine how, or you, if you think education is expensive, think of the expense of not being educated.
That's it, exactly.
And that's in a nutshell. So Social Venture Partners comes together, bridging ideas, bridging players, if you will, in the game, and bridging funding to get to where it's needed, and also educate funders on what is needed so that perhaps their own guidelines and parameters can be more inclusive to what's relevant right now for community. Yes?
Yes, that's right. In fact, Social Venture Partners started during the tech boom when there was all of this money and people not knowing how to have impact. So we kind of bridge the philanthropic world, helping people who have some means, whether it be financial or expertise, and taking that and using that with our nonprofit partners in a way that is incredibly effective and supportive of the work that they're doing. So we are kind of the bridge between those two, helping support nonprofits and also helping community members understand how they can have impact. You can write a check and send it off to your alma mater or to the hospital, all good things. But in working with us, you can have real local heart, you know, community impact, and leverage those dollars and that expertise to support, as you said, our local infrastructure, our local ecosystem.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to hear a little bit more about the April event that's coming up when we come back from our break. You're listening to Rainmakers on 1030 The Voice, The Morning Voice. This is Lydia Aranda. Good morning. Welcome back. This is Lydia Aranda, and I am hosting Rainmakers here on a Monday morning at KVOI, The Morning Voice. Our guest this morning has been CEO of Social Venture Partners, Aunt Tucson, Anne Miske. Anne, thank you again for being with us this morning.
It's been fun.
Oh, wonderful. We were talking just before the break on bringing voices to the table, on focusing on not only actions and services and funding that go to those out in community who provide the essential services that so many folks need, but changing it a bit to make sure that we are focusing on funding those other parts that actually help strengthen an ecosystem, that help multi-generational trajectory, that are about sustainability of solutions. Yes?
Yes, that's it exactly. So really focusing on, you know, those basic social determinants of health, but from a preventive standpoint as well as an emergency standpoint. And so, you know, we really focus on things like early childhood education, because we know that those 0 to 5 years are crucial for people's future success.
So in every way.
Housing, of course, is a huge issue. It's always identified as probably the number one issue, affordable housing. And so we're working with city and county right now on that. People may have heard of the Prosperity Initiative, which were 13 policies passed by both the city and county, which is pretty amazing. People living here should be very proud of their elected officials. 13 policies that really focus on ending poverty, intergenerational poverty, and then 3 cross policies, which talk about things like multi-generational work, the environment, and lowering crime in our city. So one of the things we're doing at Social Venture Partners is really aligning with that work and making sure that we can lead sort of the community side of that, because government can't do it alone. It needs community. So we're working very specifically on evidence-based policies, again, to end that cycle of poverty for families in our community.
That's really great. And when one talks about ending poverty, it's not always about helping those in the most impoverished state of their life or of their circumstance, but it's about tackling the causes.
That's right. What people don't always realize, it's human nature to blame people for the situation they're in, because we all feel like, well, we did it. What we don't realize is that there are incredible barriers, often that are built right into our systems, that make it almost impossible for people to get out of that situation.
Yes.
And so a lot of the work we do is, what are those barriers? We're, you know, people are responsible for themselves. We don't go in and save people. We help and support. We provide opportunity. But more than that, we try to reduce those barriers. And what we see is, if we can do that for people, people want to succeed. They want to get ahead. They don't want to live in poverty. There's these myths out there that they want to be homeless, that they want to be. No, far from the truth. It's just that sometimes the barriers are so huge that people end up giving up. So that's one of the things that we work on.
You know, there's the phrase, not a handout, but a hand up. And I also think of that when I hear that phrase. I think about the hands that go out side to side to have the nonprofits and the agencies, local or statewide or even national agencies, work together that help bridge or connect the private sector and the public sector to the nonprofit sector. And that's the kind of work that Social Venture Partners is doing. Tell us real quickly, as we start to wrap up the show, the date of your upcoming Fast Pitch, which is a fabulous event that brings so much of this success and funding together.
So again, it's April 3rd, 7 in the evening. It'll be held at the Fox Theater, downtown Tucson. And it is an incredibly fun, inspiring, you will come away with tears and hopefully laughter. But what it does is it supports our local nonprofits who are out there doing incredible work. So come, have a wonderful evening. Bring your credit card or your pocketbook, because this is really about supporting our nonprofits who, frankly, are struggling right now and desperately need your help.
Thank you so much. And this is SVP Tucson helping to support Tucson community and the extended Pima County communities by the work that's happening with those Tucson-based nonprofits, yes?
Yes, that is correct. So we work with Tucson nonprofits as well as some in the county.
Anne, it has been such a pleasure having you on this morning. I hope that you will plan to come back again on Rainmakers, because you truly are a rainmaker yourself, as is the organization that you lead. It's been fun getting to know you and our commonalities and background of phone operator experiences and our love for being proud of being North American.
And thank you, Lydia. It has been such a pleasure to be here and to share a little bit with the public about what we do. And yes, I would love to come back sometime.
Well, that's wonderful. And we're wishing you the best of luck as you prepare for Fast Pitch. And for the listeners, thank you for listening with our conversation with Anne Miske. Coming up, we have in our next hour will be Caitlin Schmidt of Tucson Spotlight. And Matt Neely, thanks so much for your engagement in this first hour. You've been listening to Rainmakers. I'm Lydia Aranda, the host every Monday morning on The Morning Voice here at KVOI. Anne, wishing you a great Monday.
The Morning Voice will be right back, right after the news at the top of the hour.
Good morning. We are back this wonderful Tucson warm Monday morning. This is Rainmakers, and I'm Lydia Aranda. We are excited for our second hour of our show, where we continue to talk to leaders and innovators who are helping not only support community, services, education, workforce, but are bringing the much-needed voice to advocate on behalf of our community, making this Southern Arizona a place where all can thrive. We're excited for this second hour, where our guest this morning is Caitlin Schmidt. Hi, Caitlin. How are you?
Hi, Lydia. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
You bet. It's wonderful to have you this morning. And Matt, you've been doing a great job supporting and jumping in. And I love the music selections that you always give us. Thanks so much for your good work. Again, Rainmakers is dedicated to conversations about where we're headed, not only from whence we've come, but how we can all work together more strongly to build safe, healthy, sustainable communities, not only for our businesses and families, but really for others who are planning to join us if they haven't yet come down here on a snowboard vacation, or to study at our wonderful colleges and universities here in the region, or maybe open up a business themselves. And in our first hour, we had spoken with Anne Miske, the CEO of Social Venture Partners Tucson. She was born in Tucson, went away for a while, came back, and is doing great things to help in community. Caitlin, you are here not only for many, many years here in the Tucson area, but we are so excited to have you because you are bringing voice to many of the issues, the work you do in journalism and in local news.
I'm trying.
You certainly work very hard at that. For the listeners, let me give a little bit of background, and then I'd love for you to tell us some of the things that you're up to lately. Anyone who hasn't met Caitlin yet, I hope you get to do so. She's very active and present in community, participating in a lot of nonprofit and small business activities and reporting on them, but also touches our local community by teaching as an adjunct professor at the U of A in the School of Journalism. Caitlin, tell us a little bit about the courses that you teach.
Yes, so this semester and since 2020 now, I've been teaching reporting public affairs, which I love to say is nobody's favorite course going in, but most of their favorite courses going out. So it's really focusing on local government, on the public's right to information, navigating the systems that we need to know, not just as reporters, but as informed citizens. So who do you contact if a tree goes down in your neighborhood or a street lamp goes out? Where do you go if you have an issue with not getting your ballot in the mail, that sort of thing?
All of those things are so important. And I think I love what you said, that sometimes people are hesitant or just kind of roll their eyes and say, why do I have to take this class? Do I really need to take this class? Or my counselor said that this is what I need to earn my degree, but I don't get it. And then they come out getting it. That's the beauty of information. And that's what happens in local news reporting, no?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and it's hard not to get excited about the issues that we're talking about these days. When I took the class, gosh, 10 or 11 years ago, longer than that, we were talking about things like sewage rates and zoning for when we would cover city council and Pima County Board of Supervisors. And now it's quite literally life or death issues like substance use and affordable housing. And so it's, I mean, for young people, these are issues that they're already concerned about. And now they understand a little better what they can do, both as journalists and as members of a community, to address them.
Sure. And that interaction between the two, what to share by information and what's available, the resources that are available to find the information or to answer the question, but also is there's a gap there that maybe as a local community member or as an elected official or as someone in a corporate role perhaps can play in bridging those gaps.
Yep, absolutely. They're always a little astounded and scared at the amount of public information they can find about themselves and other people out there. But they always do walk away with questions about why isn't this available? Where do I go to find it? And I think one of the great things about covering local government and teaching it is how accessible our elected officials are. I mean, they answer students' emails. They treat them like professionals. And I think that really goes a long way in boosting their confidence as they start to enter this career field.
Mm-hmm. And it's a career field that is more and more available in different genres of how to not only research and report on the research and gather information, but then how to report. So many different modes of communication, so many different outlets. And I'm going to say many times those outlets might be so myopically local, maybe, you know, somebody's own personal podcast, but then it gets thrown into this national or even global space. And navigating all of that and keeping the news local is something that I think communities benefit from. We've seen research to that extent, but you're really an expert in that field of keeping local news local. Tell us a little bit about that in your journey since graduating from the U of A 11 years ago and building up your career, not only here with some of the most prominent print and digital publications, but then what it's like to start something new that is truly local.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I had a great time at the Arizona Daily Star. I think I covered just about everything and really had the freedom to experiment with how we presented that news in different formats as well as different areas of coverage. You know, I had some great projects when I was there covering gender-based violence, where we were able to do like in-depth series with accompanying podcasts. During the pandemic, I was on the sports beat when sports stopped and pitched the idea of a lengthy project. I think we ended up doing 35 stories about high school athletes whose high school careers had essentially been cut short because they were missing out on their senior season. So I had so much fun with that Spring Stars series. It really kept me hopeful, and I felt like it kept the community hopeful, and really, I feel like highlighted the importance of truly local news that isn't necessarily the most click-worthy headlines, but is just about people doing good and trying to benefit the community. So around that time, we were seeing a decline in trust in the news. It was the peak of the pandemic.
Sure.
Everyone was really tired of it. And so I pitched the idea of a solutions beat that focused exclusively on people and groups and programs trying to fix problems in Southern Arizona, you know, bridge barriers, fill gaps in equity, all of that sort of thing. And we ran with that for a really long time. And I think that's the favorite beat that I ever had. And that really drove home the importance of just highlighting these local processes that make our community special, that fit into the larger systems that are screaming at us from 8,000 channels on our social media, on our televisions, on our radio. And so when layoffs hit the Star and we did away with some of these things like Spanish language reporting, like solutions coverage, I decided to kind of strike out on my own. And so I joined forces with a couple of former colleagues at the Star, one who was also in Tucson, another who was in Phoenix, to start the Tucson Agenda, which was a Substack newsletter that focused largely on government and politics. But I negotiated my way into some solutions coverage there. So we did a lot of that. And then right after the primary election, my partner who was in Tucson announced that he was going to be moving out of state and wanted to continue to make editorial decisions and report on what was happening here. And I felt like that was not what we had promised the community, and I was going to be the one here to explain this away. And so I decided to venture out on my own and start something new. And that was Tucson Spotlight. And it turned out I actually didn't have to venture out on my own because Susan Barnett, who was working with us at Tucson Agenda, wanted to come with me and launch this newsroom. And then a couple of our interns came with me as well. And so we started Tucson Spotlight as a four-person team. We quickly took on four additional interns from the U of A before we even launched, and launched September 30th, right before the election. But that was a conscious choice, right? I think the smarter thing probably would have been to spend 6 or so months fundraising and building an infrastructure to make sure that we could do this. But it felt like all eyes were on the presidential race, as they should be. But we had Pima County Board of Supervisors. Sure.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah, there were all sorts of local races. So we didn't want to sit out on it. So we launched September 30th. We're about to hit 6 months. We've since grown to a newsroom of 14. And it's a lot of students and new grads. And I didn't realize at the time how much those people needed a place here. There just aren't enough opportunities for them. So that is our goal, to continue to be a hub for them and focus on uncovered topics and bring back robust Spanish language coverage, because that has been missing for a while.
Oh, so much so. And in this Sonoran community, in this Sonoran Desert, you know, binational borderlands, greater borderlands region, you would think that that would continue to be a priority and keep things going. So kudos to you for doing that. And also to you and Susan for founding this so quickly. You hit on a couple of points. There were very prominent, very relevant national issues that were going to impact our local community, and you wanted to be sure that you were bringing the issues local and keeping that opportunity to have that local voice there. So thank you both for having the gumption and being the chingonas, if you will, to jump in and do that. Anyone who speaks Spanish or is here local can remember that. That word is strong and bold and willing to lead in some of the new paths. Forge ahead. We are excited to have you here this morning. I know there's so much more that we can talk about, including the fact that Rainmakers itself is a new local outlet, and I'm happy to have you, who have founded so many pathways and award-winning at that, by the way. We'll talk a little bit more about that as when we come back from our break, which is going to be coming up here in a moment. You are listening to Rainmakers. I'm Lydia Aranda with guest Caitlin Schmidt this morning on our show with The Morning Voice. And we're back. This is Lydia Aranda here with Rainmakers, the Monday episode of The Morning Voice show here at KVOI 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. And in the second hour of our show this Monday morning, we're speaking with Caitlin Schmidt. Caitlin, thank you for being here this morning.
It's a pleasure.
Caitlin is an award-winning solutions journalism reporter and has been telling us about her career path from Arizona Daily Star here locally to opening up Tucson Agenda to now her current local news outlet of the nonprofit newsroom called Tucson Spotlight that she co-founded and is the editor and publisher of. And in that seat, we are also speaking a little bit about some things coming up right now here in Tucson that do impact information. They're a little bit of a one-off, kind of a sister effort about books. Anyone who has been to the Tucson Festival of Books and has fallen in love with the exchange of information, perspective, writing, the training that could happen, the tips and tricks about how to write, how to author, because those are two different things. And what happens at something so full of literacy, so full of literature. Caitlin, you are on the book committee, or the book and author committee, is that what it's called? So tell us a little bit about how going from your journalism role, which is a very specific type of writing, listening, reporting, to then going into this wild world of books.
I mean, it's the dream, right? I think all of us in journalism secretly want to write a book someday. It's just a matter of if we'll ever get to it. But yeah, the Arizona Daily Star plays a huge role in the Tucson Festival of Books. They're a title sponsor. And so I started moderating panels several years ago when I was reporting at the Star, which many of the staffers do. And then when I left the Star, I joined the book and author committee to kind of assist in a background role, help out with some newsy things things like copy editing and fill in the gaps. And then this year is my first year on the fiction committee.
Oh, wow.
Yes, which has been so fun. I am a lover of fiction. In the past, I had moderated sports panels, which is fun, but I'm not really sports reporting anymore. So this is a little more relevant to my books of interest that I try to read on my free time. But it's so fun. I mean, it's a big group of people. We get together. We look at the new releases that are coming out. We think about who would draw big crowds and then send out invites and whittle it down. And cobbling them all together in panels that make sense seems like such a difficult task, but really is easy when you think about it, since we're talking about themes and topics and settings and whatnot. So it's been really fun to be kind of in the background and see how this amazing event comes together. I will say they make it look seamless. It is not, but it's a fantastic effort, largely volunteer-based too, and it's just been great to be a part of it.
Oh my gosh, it is so exciting, and I think you hit on so many things there, including the fact that this is definitely the swan or the duck that you're seeing from the upside of the lake, and underneath that paddling is happening at full speed. Lots of different directions, because books and stories can go in so many directions. They reflect on the past. They could give us ideas of where to head in the future. They provide a world for people who maybe need a little escape or just might need a little bit of identification to be able to say, oh, wow, someone else is thinking that same way as I am, or went through that same experience that I did. I mean, books are what it's all about. And this is such a fabulous and famous event that happens right here in our old Pueblo.
Yes, second largest in the United States.
Isn't
we sure
amazing?
Are proud of it.
Yes, and we need to keep it going. I know that there is a newer executive director, and she seems, by all accounts, to be really wrapping her arms around this and managing the huge volunteer aspect, the funding aspect, getting together with you all in the committees. And I can hardly wait to see her in full action in this first Book of Festivals under her tenure.
Yeah, she's done a fantastic job of wrangling the troops and really helping everything come together.
So if people want to find out a little bit more about Book of Festivals, where can they go?
TucsonFestivalOfBooks.org. There's also a mobile app that is really handy that you can download to your phone.
Super.
If you're a planner like I am, the mobile app allows you to add sessions directly to your calendar, which makes it really easy to remember where you want to be and where you're supposed to go.
Sure, because there's so much happening in different locations on the mall,
yes.
In the rooms, etc.
Yes, and great food, too, really good book shopping.
Get those gifts out. You start your holiday shopping now. That's wonderful. Well, I'm so excited that you continue to be involved in that and you continue to promote that, not only on Tucson Spotlight, but really in exchanges like this. And I'm going to guess in your classroom, too. We are in spring break. This week?
We are in spring break this week. A lot of students come back by next weekend or at least by Sunday, and I every semester have offered extra credit if they attend relevant either, you know, political or journalism themed sessions at the festival.
That must be exciting and a fun way for them to get a little extra credit in your classroom. I want to go back to a couple of things that we hit on in our previous segment. Speaking of classroom and learning, and you were talking a little bit when I asked you about what kind of took you on your journey through journalism in these different approaches of keeping local news local, but at the same time talking about issues that could be relevant anywhere or have impact beyond our Southern Arizona community. And you spoke about the different kind of multi-story, multi-podcast projects that you would do. I loved when you reflected on what was going on during pandemic and really creating a solutions beat. When you spoke about the spring stories having to do with sports as well. And I remember kind of starting to get to know you back then because I was running a nonprofit here in the area that was very essential, had many different programs from youth and education and elderly and housing and health and wellness and small business. We had a lot that we touched, but at the end of the day during pandemic, we were like everybody else trying to focus on what is the most pertinent that we need to do, and then also how can we bridge that into things that are a little bit perhaps less daunting, more exciting, and create those pathways. And for us, there was a big graduation commencement coming up at the time. We ran two community schools, and they were smaller classes the class of 2020 was a little bit smaller for us, but we were able to put together a very innovative commencement solution that was covered by the Daily Star Sports because we had a coalition with FC Tucson. We also, at the wonderful hosting of the Tucson Airport, Dennett Bewley and her team, they brought our students together with their family members in the only and first CDC-compliant live commencement celebration because we were able to maneuver in small groups and maneuver in such a great venue like the airport. And then we had our local sports heroes celebrating our students and their families. And the coverage that you all gave to that was just so wonderful. And it also planted seeds that when you bring multiple industries together, you can come up with solutions. And that was kind of your whole point of the solutions beat.
Yep, and that was such a good example of really like various sectors coming together in such an unexpected way. I mean, if you would have thrown a local high school, professional soccer team, and international airport into a hat and mixed it up, I don't think anyone would have come up with that particular arrangement. But I mean, it was just such a beautiful and creative solution to a problem. And I mean, you know that those students are never going to forget that experience for the rest of their lives.
Absolutely. I reflect back in those pictures and video often, and it was pretty great stuff. And I remember one thing that happened there is we had curfew right about 4 days before the commencement. All of a sudden, there was a city curfew that had been implemented as well. So we were able to get in and out of there and everybody home safely before the 8 p.m. curfew. So it really worked out pretty well. But the reason I bring that up also is because, among other things, I remember seeing in your bio and notating that in 2019, just before that, you had produced a 6-story, 5-podcast project about the efforts to stop sexual misconduct at universities, huge issue also that has impact to many, but requires so much collaboration from many to come together in the solution. Tell us a little bit about the players that kind of were coming together in those stories that you were reporting on, but also with a goal that you were trying to develop solution to that, or at least attempt solution to that.
Yeah, that was such an interesting time. The U of A was experiencing kind of a wave of allegations or coming to light about past misconduct by athletes or coaches or members of the athletic department, largely targeting women. And I had done significant reporting on that and felt like the story wasn't done. And kind of by happenstance, the Solutions Journalism Network at that time announced a fellowship called the Me Too Fellowship that focused on issues that impacted women and discrimination in some way. And so I pitched this series focusing on the solutions angle of it and planned to travel across the country to several different schools to talk to experts about solutions and thought it would be super easy and really was not. Baylor was the first university to really welcome me with open arms and gave me full access to campus, introduced me to people running their Title IX office to talk about how they, in the wake of perhaps the most serious scandal of the time, had really come together to improve systems in a way that legal experts were saying that they were on the top tier of schools doing the right thing when it comes to Title IX. So,
and isn't that so important that what you were doing is taking something that is so daunting, so negative, often people don't want to talk about it because of the potential or real impact that they're experiencing at their school or just being in that situation, but you were trying to shed light on it to show that we can build a solution around this, we can help solve the problem, and that's what that was all about. We're about to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about other solutions that you've been a part of, including last year's local news, local impact event that happened right here in Tucson. So stick with us. We're talking with Caitlin Schmidt this morning on Rainmakers, The Morning Voice. I'm Lydia Aranda. We'll talk to you in just a moment. And we're back. This is Lydia Aranda with Rainmakers on The Morning Voice. And this morning I'm talking with Caitlin Schmidt. Hi, Caitlin. Thanks again for being here this morning.
Thanks for having me.
We're so excited. For the listeners who may not know or who just joining us now, Caitlin is an award-winning solutions journalism reporter. She is also an adjunct professor of journalism for public affairs and gathering that aspect of journalism at the U of A, has been here in Tucson for quite a number of years and been very active in all things reporting, all things local news, trying to help support and mentor other up-and-coming journalists, and now is co-founder, editor, and publisher of Tucson Spotlight. Caitlin, it's so exciting to have you here because we've been talking of a number of issues that are solutions-focused and local.
Yes, yes.
And that is the mission. I love that you and Susan, the other co-founder, and your staff now of interns, some volunteer interns, some student interns, also paid staff, that you are all focused on providing Southern Arizona with robust community-based journalism, emphasizing solutions, local governments, education, sustainability, on and on, and issues all through the lens of Hispanic community, multicultural community, indigenous. The list just goes on and on of the various angles that you have to create this nonprofit newsroom that is working for the locals.
We're sure trying, and we're having fun.
Yes, and even though the issues can be heavy, I love the fact that you continue all throughout your career and in every role that you play, even as a volunteer or participant, you look for saying, so all of that might be big, it might be big, fat, hairy, and scary, it might be super exciting and wonderful, but what do we do to get to solutions? You always wear that lens, and you're inclusive in that. You bring in lots of folks who may be an expert for many different reasons. They may have experienced whatever the topic is at hand, I notice, or they may come from a study field or another career field in a current or past life, maybe on their second or third career. And so they bring this interesting perspective and experience-based sharing that can inform whatever the issue is, and that's how we get to solution. I like to call it the collaborative social impact. That's what I've studied in my education, and it all seems to be being mindful of what's going on and making sure there's dialogue.
Absolutely. There's a theory, systems thinking is a theory that we go through, and systems thinking for journalism is a very real way of looking at the topics that we report on and how they touch on so much more than just that one issue. When you're talking about education, I mean, really, equity comes into play. Mm-hmm. Financial aspects come into play. It's never just one bucket. So thinking about the bigger picture and all of these systems and how they interconnect and work together or maybe against each other in certain cases.
Sure. That happens because people are people. We've got information flowing in all kinds of ways. But being able to step back and not try to over-influence, but really just report on the facts, I would imagine is a very tenuous, detailed purpose. When you're in journalism, that's the point. Not trying to influence, but rather trying to inform.
Absolutely. And that's one of the more challenging things to teach a younger staff these days when the issues are so very big and in their minds so very clear. Just reminding them that we dial it back and we let our information and we let our experts and we let the data speak for itself so that our readers and our audience can make their own decisions.
Yes, that's so important. And part of that, again, is making sure to keep local news local so that you can take whatever is happening in the world at a global or even, out in the universe, and taking that and whittling it down to national, whittling it down to maybe state, and then whittling it down to saying, so why does it matter here, wherever here may be? And to that extent, I want to congratulate you on last year, Community Foundation of Southern Arizona and its partners and funders and board. I have to say very much thank you to their board for supporting this, started an initiative about local news, local impact, and held the local news, local impact event. And that was to kick off the knowledge so that others in the community would know about what the Community Foundation was doing and investing in. There were some awards given out, and I know that you were part of that, but also you were part of a panel that spoke at that event. Tell us about how wonderful it was for, I remember attending, and I know why I thought it was wonderful, but tell me from your perspective what it was like to join Marty Baron and Brian Stelter at this local news, local impact event to share perspectives on local news crisis, and how we all can be a part of that solution.
Yeah, you know, right when you think you've gotten over imposter syndrome, there you are on a panel with Marty Baron and Brian Stelter. So it was a little bit surreal. It was definitely an honor to be invited. And I think it was so meaningful because these men are giants of national news. They are leaders in their field of national news. And to have them sit on that stage and drive home the importance of truly local coverage, I think just really backed up everything that I have felt and worked so hard and made a big statement to our audience, too. Those are some powerful voices in journalism coming out in support of small local startups. Mm-hmm. And they both have had their careers in legacy outlets. So to have people like that supporting small independent outlets that are not corporate owned, that are community based, is really meaningful.
Absolutely. And if I recall correctly, there were 6 inaugural grantees. And I know that the fundraising continues and more grantees are coming up, I think have not yet been announced.
Applications are due next Monday.
That's right. So anybody who doesn't know about this, let's let the audience know or the listeners know if they're interested in applying or they know someone else who might be great to apply. This is for, like you said, local news outlets, often startups, often nonprofits, they might be, but not necessarily. And it is not limited just to the Tucson area, but to the Southern Arizona region. Is that correct?
Yeah, they're looking at south of Gila River, basically. So Yuma outlets are welcome to apply. The one thing that they ask is that these outlets are either based in Southern Arizona, or if they're not based here, they're leading projects that focus on Southern Arizona and will disseminate news to people in Southern Arizona.
And that's for print, digital, and broadcast outlets, right?
Yes. Yes.
So exciting. So where could they go to apply? Is that to the Community Foundation?
Yes.
Which I believe is...
I think it's CFSAZ.org.
It sure is.
Yeah.
So anyone listening to and wants to apply, those applications are not due until...
Monday the 17th. You can also donate, too. They're still accepting donations.
Much needed.
Yeah, much needed. They've done a great job fundraising, but this is a space where we are only needing more news, more reporters as the issues get more serious.
And with this kind of support, this is how all of us can ensure that Southern Arizonans have access to the robust local reporting, the essential news, and reliable civic information that is needed to be informed, empowered, and engaged. That's what I recall hearing over and over again. I know the advisory board to the Local News Initiative of Southern Arizona felt that, and I'm so glad to know that you continue to be involved and engaged in that. And you did a fabulous job holding your own and being a great example of why your fellow panelists, Marty Baron and Brian Stelter, were coming for that initiative. It was not only to express their interest, but to support leaders like you who are making a difference.
Well, thank you.
It's so very true. You know, solutions-based, solutions-focused is not only your mantra on how you're running these outlets, but also how you approach other great, we talked about the book festival coming up, but following the book festival is another solutions-focused initiative that happens, I want to say, quarterly, twice a year?
It's about 4 times a year, I think we're doing it now.
About 4 times a year, the Solutions-Focused Community Book Club of Community Foundation of Southern Arizona. And you have been a part of that from the start when it launched about a year and a half ago. Is that correct?
Yes, it'll be 2 years in June, actually.
Oh. Wow.
I can't believe it. It's been fantastic, though. Partnered up with the Tucson Tome Gnome and the Community Foundation to host this book club where we focused on topics that are relevant, sometimes daunting, but the solutions aspect for them. So we typically pair a nonfiction and a fiction book. This month, we will be talking about the book My Side of the River by Elizabeth Caramillo Gutierrez, who was actually at the Festival of Books last year. And we have a panel at this one preceding the discussion about the book, we'll talk about the impact of immigration issues. So we have the CEO of Youth on Their Own, Elizabeth, the author, spent time with Youth on Their Own when she was living here. My partner, Susan Barnett, is going to talk about her experience with her family being separated under SB 1070.
Wow.
And then we have the executive director of the Kino Border Initiative to talk about their efforts under these tumultuous times.
And isn't it that's so true. There's just so much upheaval going on. And has been going on for quite a number of years, and it seems to ebb and flow a little bit. But the point about bringing the people together in this book club, and by the way, this is open to the public. Is that
free and open to the public?
People can read the book, come and participate in a talk group, and share not only their voice, but work to maybe building some solutions together. I'd like to talk a little bit more about how book clubs and other efforts like this really help with building solution and sharing information and facts. So we're going to talk about that when we come back in our last segment after the commercial break. You're listening to Rainmakers on The Morning Voice, KVOI. And we're back. This is Lydia Aranda with Rainmakers here on The Morning Voice. And we're speaking with Caitlin Schmidt, editor and publisher of Tucson Spotlight. Caitlin, thanks again for being here with us this morning. We were speaking before the break about solutions-focused efforts, which kind of has been the whole conversation throughout, but particularly with that, not only related to the coursework that you teach and the projects that you give your students at the U of A, all the way into what Tucson Spotlight is focusing on when it is reporting, but often tries to not only share the facts of whatever the issue, the local news story is, but provide a pathway of folks who might be interested in building solution about where they can get involved in the issue. Correct?
Yes, absolutely. It's important to provide action items for these things so that if they feel inspired or even if they feel angry, that they can do something about it.
Yes, a call to action. They talk about that in everything, especially in nonprofit work, because you always have to have the call to action, say, please support us and here's how. And it doesn't always have to be money. It can be engagement. It can be spreading the word, amplifying. It can be so many other things that can help support an initiative, an effort, a project. And in local news, I think that is particularly useful to have that solutions focus. And with that, we were talking about the upcoming Solutions Focus Community Book Club event happening April 10th at the Community Foundation of Southern Arizona campus. Every time there is a different pair of books that focus on a particular theme. I remember one of the events that I attended early on in this initiative talked about wildfires, and it talked about environment, and it talked about the issues therein and how folks could really start to get more information and not just put environment or climate issues into a box of politics or into a box of electricity only. It was really all these other things of what happens when windstorms take over, or the wildfires like we're seeing in California recently, and here in Arizona. We always have wildfires here and there, and they've been devastating. So the issues can vary throughout the book club meetings and gatherings, yes?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. And that one was that book, Fire Weather, was particularly daunting. Mm-hmm. So we really worked hard to find a trio of experts that would not leave people feeling terrified, but would leave them feeling like they could do something maybe to help curb what's happening with some of these environmental changes.
Sure, and I remember one of those panelists was a young gentleman who is at the U of A still, was doing some research, had a lot of facts and data, and really gave a different perspective to how some students were getting involved in their field of study and bringing more data and creating focus groups and wanting to bridge some collaborations to get more information in, and how that was a local effort on such a big national, or I dare say global, issue.
Yes, that was Oja Sanghi from the Arizona Youth Climate Coalition, who still is incredibly active. I'm actually moderating a panel with Oja's Phil Berry from Pima Community College and Fatima Luna from the City of Tucson at 10 West in a couple weeks about climate solutions that have worked here in Tucson. So we all continue to remain active in this space.
Yes, so much. And, you know, 10 West is another great example of something happening here in Tucson that is about more than Tucson, certainly more than even Southern Arizona, even though it tends to be framed in that space. It brings up issues, topics, opportunities where Tucson-based businesses, Tucson-based leaders, nonprofits, government agencies, all kind of, and even corporations can get involved, and even more so, the university students, the college students, and I dare say high school students can figure out, wow, there's a lot happening in arts, culture, business, and 10 West has really experienced a lot of shift and change in the recent years. I'm so glad you continue to be involved.
Yes. Yeah. And I think, you know, this community is one that really values our youth and how they feel and how they think. So it's been really nice to see groups like the Arizona Youth Climate Coalition be at the table with the Tucson City Council, be invited up to the state legislature, groups like Tucson Young Professionals that are involved. I mean, we are leaving them with a boatload of problems. And I think it's important to have them in those discussions now, since they're going to be part of the solution.
Well, and also I think it gives ideas for young people who may be struggling with, I'm not sure what field I might want to go into when I grow up. I think you and I would probably be some of them saying we're still growing up, but we know our fields.
Yeah. I had a couple false starts before I made it here. So it's hard to know when you're 18.
Yeah, it sure is. And when you can think, when one can see how certain people are applying their studies, it may not be even in the same field of which their major, quote unquote, was in. So engineering could be one of those, communications, like for me, journalism for you. So many different folks can apply what they have studied into a number of fields. And this gives an example of that, or how it can be useful in the collaboration and building those solutions. So again, Community Foundation, Tucson Spotlight really shows there are so many ways to go with Community Foundation, with 10 West, with Book Festival, all these things that are bridging institutions of higher learning back together with community opportunities. And that's what Rainmakers is all about. It's been such a joy to have you on this morning in this session. I hope we will have you back again. And we look forward to continuing to see the great work that you are helping make happen and leading with Tucson Spotlight. And thank you very much for all that you do in community.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been so fun.
Well, we look forward to our listeners continuing to tell us what they're interested in. Just know that you can always call in to 520-790-2040. Let Matt Neely know. Let any of us know on The Morning Voice. This is a weekday show. Mondays is Rainmakers, but we have engagement coming up tomorrow with General Ted Maxwell, and he will tell you more tomorrow about what's happening the rest of the week.
And I'll be sitting in for Ted tomorrow.
Oh, I didn't know that. How exciting.
That's scary, huh?
That'll be a lot of fun. And so all of you listeners, please call in and talk with Matt. He's going to have exciting guests who are
Angel Charity of Tucson.
Fantastic.
Or Angel Charity for Children. Frank Antonori, and Cochise County Supervisor now. And Bill Bupert, who has a fascinating podcast. We're going to talk about the repercussions of fighting cartels on Mexican soil. So that'll be very interesting.
Oh, my goodness. That is interesting. And yes, very much so. And I see that Caitlin's eyes has gone up. We will be paying attention. Everyone have a great Monday. Thanks for listening to Rainmakers on The Morning Voice. Caitlin, thanks for being here.